You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Another episode of Fly on the Call is here, and this time I'm talking to 3 out of 4 of the members of Guilt. For the past few years, the band has been touring around the country, releasing music mostly for the purpose of having something to promote, while working to make their debut album the best it could be. In 2020, everything they have done to this point has paid off in multiple ways. While it is bittersweet that they have not been able to tour on Ignore What's Missing, which was released back in August, the friendships, connections, and fanbase they've built up have done an amazing job of supporting the band regardless and spreading the word. Ignore What's Missing is a melting pot of emo, post-hardcore, punk, and other genres, often switching sounds and styles not just from one song to the next, but within individual songs themselves. Our discussion hits on the music, the live show, ethics, representation, and more. Enjoy.
I'm Nico, the bass player / backup vocalist for Guilt. My pronouns are they, them, and yeah.
I'm Ash, and I play the drums in Guilt, and my pronouns are they, she, he, and that's about it.
Hi, I'm Tristan. I play guitar in Guilt, and my pronouns are they, them.
And I just kind of wanted to start out by hearing a little bit about the MCR cover set you did for Halloween. I feel like the songs off Bullets aren't kind of what would immediately come to people's minds when they hear about a set, but you really killed it, and I feel like they fit with your style so well. So what was it like kind of preparing for that and actually having the chance to play live?
So for me personally, it was terrifying because out of all, I think I'm the one least familiar with My Chemical Romance. So like learning kind of like the songs that I feel like not a real fan, but like if you follow My Chem for a while, like you know, was very hard because those songs are very long and they're really good. Like I ended up with a lot of songs off of those records, but it was very nerve-wracking, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. It was really put on a costume.
Yeah, I would agree with like the costuming was like so much fun. I was like, oh my god, I feel like I'm in the Helena music video, like I'm in the pews of that church, and I'm just like, oh, this is I'm real emo here. But I think also when you said like Bullets isn't the first thing that comes to mind, I would say the exact same thing, because I didn't think like I wasn't sure how people would like receive doing Bullets. I don't know like what popularity that record has within the MCR fan base. It's kind of hard to tell. But I love Vampires and Honey. Those are the top two tracks off that record, at least for me. So it was just a lot of fun doing that and trying to pretend like I was Gerard Way.
Hell yeah. I think, that like, I'm sort of on the same boat with Nico, where like, I'm not super familiar with MCR. And the stuff that I am familiar from is like, you know, like Black Parade, right? And never really delved much further past that. I mean, my favorite MCR song is Cemetery Drive, without a doubt. But like, that's just because it's like a really, really cool drum rhythm. But I feel like the songs on Bullets, and the ones that we specifically did, like Honey and Vampires, like fit well with the type of music that we play already, and like it sort of fits within our aesthetic, so it was really it like made sense to choose those songs. I'd say the one that was sort of the most out of place is I Don't Love You, because we never do like ballady type songs, but it was really, really, it was still really fun to play. We sort of chose the set based on sort of like energy, like we have, you know, the riff from Vampires, like oh shit, you know, starting with that, and then sort of like more aggression, and then I Don't Love You is like sad, and then Helena just kind of ends it and everybody's like, oh fuck yeah, because like that was MCR's last song that they did.
The only one that matters.
Yeah.
I would say that Ash had the biggest, like, Ash definitely had to like do the most here, I think, out of all of us in terms of like preparedness and stuff, because Ash doesn't ever front. Like, this is, I mean, they have a couple times, but this is like, it's kind of new, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I mean, this is, I would say yes and also no, just because I practice like I'm Gerard Way every day. I'll just be like, time to go make
just
my
always ready for this moment.
Yeah, if I'm ready for Gerard Way to be like, hey kid, like, I just, and I'm like, I'm here. I'm like, let me just, please, let me be you. And I'm pretty sure after that, he's going to be like, absolutely not. Anyways, but I, one of the things is that remembering lyrics, I will remember them when I'm listening to a song, when I hear the vocals, but without the vocals, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know what words are anymore. There could be a lot of phrases going on here, and I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I'm definitely the same way as that.
Yeah, that was difficult. I was just listening to, I was just looking at the words, and I was like, I have to pretend like I can read right now, okay?
I mean, from what I can tell, you have, like, a very kinetic stage presence, and, you know, really have, like, focus on the interaction with the crowd as well, which I feel like is somewhat of a lost art in a way, and something that, like, even shined through on, like, the Morningside session that you did. Can you tell me a little bit about like that live show and, you know, what you want the experience to be?
So like, I think as long as I've been in almost like 3 years now, there's been like a big sense of like importance in entertaining as well as like playing music, which like when we played live shows was really apparent in like a lot of the chaotic that we kind of like put into just doing what we do. And I think it's in a way to kind of like help people that are listening to our music to like feel comfortable with, you know, doing whatever they wanted, and also like kind of just expressing our music in a way that like also deals with the emotions of the music, I guess. And in terms of like doing live sessions, because it's been a very new process for us. So it's been kind of interesting to like navigate doing stuff in a very closed space that is also like not live, and is also like us being entangled in like so many wires and stuff. So there's like sometimes only so much that we can do. But it's been interesting to navigate. It's definitely like a different thing for us coming from being like touring musicians, but it's been something that, you know, we think is important to adjust to considering the state of the world, things aside.
Yeah, I want to tack on to that also with like I think a lot of people, like when we're up there, like, you know, like Nico and Tyler, like they'll get into the crowd. And we're all just like kind of screaming the entire time, just like ambiguously just screaming in between songs as well. But like there was a show we had played in my hometown in Norwalk, Connecticut, and my friends like that I went to school with were like, wow, that looked like it was really cathartic. And in my head I was like, you should do that too. Like it really releases a lot of energy, and I feel like a lot of people feel that, and it makes them like comfortable to also be like, I can let my guard down a little bit and like just kind of relax. And the live session was definitely like, yeah, it was very new. It was just, I've never done anything kind of like that before. I mean, maybe like a few other times, but it was just like, I didn't know what level of energy to have that was reasonable to show on camera. I was just kind of like,
It's hard to have it's hard to put out energy, like an energetic performance when it's like, you know, you're doing it to no one. It's weird. It feels weird. It feels like an act when it's normally a very normal thing for us to, you know, like scream and do all that stuff that is, you know, really cathartic and But when it's just cameras and you don't have like that sort of interaction with other people, it's a whole different thing. And I think with, you know, the way this whole year has been, I think even getting back into live shows, it's going to be like an adjustment trying to not get back to that energy, but just sort of learn how to navigate with it. Like live shows in general are going to be a whole fucking experiment until it gets back to where it was. And, you know, obviously with caution. But, yeah, I mean, ever since the band started, I'm one of the original members. Tyler started the band. And, I mean, pretty much every single night, I used to, like, jump off drum sets. And every night I'd have, like, fingers bleeding, strings breaking, all this other stuff. And it's – Nico's sustained some injuries, too, and so is Ash. It's been
–
It's pretty wild, and it's fun as hell. I miss every second of it. Hopefully we'll get back there. But yeah, it's a weird thing. I don't know how to translate that into live streams. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the guilt session was kind of one of the best ones that I've seen, actually. Like the Wonder Years have done a couple, and I've really enjoyed those. But
thank you.
As far as like the energy, like I feel like you really nailed it for sure.
It was definitely awesome. Very interesting to play with masks the first time.
Yeah.
We had members almost die
and
trying to do it.
Yeah.
But
I can imagine that would be a very sweaty experience.
Oh, definitely. The sweatiest.
God. Yeah, it was just like, I was like, I'm breathing water. This, what? More water than normal.
And I mean, I've seen it mentioned before that kind of like the initial drive behind recording and releasing music was kind of to justify touring. And I'm curious kind of like, what is it about, you know, the tour, the travel that kind of like pulls you to the road?
I feel like it's just kind of the way that we see music. It's just like, we really much like doing things DIY. We like, booking shows, going to places, like making new friends, making new connections. Like we really value making like genuine friendships. And it's been one of the best things to like just know that in every single state, like quite literally almost every single state, we have like a friend or somebody that we could always like hit up if we're in the area. And I don't think, like personally, I would trade that for anything. Cool way that that I guess guilt just navigates towards traveling and doing stuff like that. But I don't know. At least for me, I guess that's kind of where I come from with that question.
Yeah, like the feeling of like seeing people again is so cool. It's like, oh my God, it's been months since I saw you, but I get to just catch up on our conversation like that we had last time. And I'm like, that's just really surreal. And you just get to meet new people. Kind of like Nico said, like, it's just really cool to keep making these connections and just finding all these people that are just really cool. And also I've just never wanted to really be in one place for more than one period of time. So I like going anywhere, really. Concerts make it better because it's just being surrounded by that feeling I've always been familiar with.
I think I would agree with everybody that it's like making like friendships and like genuine human connection is amazing, but we'd also probably I think I could be wrong, but I think Tyler would also probably like to point out like sort of like the history of like booking stuff in St. Augustine and just around. Like Florida's really, really hard to get out of. Thankfully we're at the northeastern tip, so we can tour out pretty easily. We have to go through Georgia, but like it's it can be a challenge to be a band in the southeast, whereas a lot of major bands and connections, I mean, you think of places like, you know, Chicago or like New York or Philly, especially Philly. My mind immediately goes to Philly. Like the word DIY, I just think Philadelphia. But you know, we got to travel out for that stuff to meet our inner friends in like bands over the internet that we see on Twitter. And it's like, damn, I would love to play a show with you one day. but like, no, we're serious and we have to book like a month tour to get there for the gas to be worth it. But yeah, making genuine friendships, but also like, it's part of like how we see being successful as a band in terms of like, you know, being able to sustainably do this and make gas money and stuff, but like also like have people listen to our music, you know, be able to share our music with people. We got a tour. It's been the best way so far for us anyway.
Yeah, I feel like with, you know, all the touring that you've done leading up to the release of the album, you know, you built up kind of like a lot of good faith, which seems like it kind of has really paid off, you know, despite the fact that you haven't been able to tour on Ignore What's Missing yet. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of like how, you know, the release has played out for you?
Well, this has been kind of like our first like big release. It's our first like full length album. And we originally were debating like when we wanted to release it, and it got to a point when we figured that with COVID like happening and everything, that we like kind of just had to go for it, and not really being signed to like a big label, like everything is relatively DIY on our end. It was kind of like stepping into new territory that I think all of us were on. And it's been like a lot of trial and error, kind of seeing what works and what doesn't work. But I think overall the reception, a lot of our friends and a lot of people that kind of just like follow us on social media have like messaged us and talked to us about the record. And we had a lot of like cool write as well, which has been really cool to just see people listen to like years of us like cultivating these songs and kind of just like deconstruct them and tell us and the reader kind of where they come from when they listen to our songs. It's been a mixed bag of like a lot of different things, but overall it's been reception, so it's been really nice.
Yeah, I think with everything going on in the world, it was kind of like we kind of have to like just we got to put it out. We can't keep waiting for the world to be on a different note. But when we did put it out, I was like really nervous because I just haven't ever like been a part of a release like this. So I didn't know what to expect, but I think like to amplify what Nico was saying about like the, how DIY it was, like it, like Nico was sending a lot of like, you know, emails out to everyone and like doing a lot of that legwork, and Knife Punch, the label that we are signed to at the moment, was also helping us with our merch and the, pre-order sales and everything. And I think with all that in mind, like it just, it felt truly cool to watch that being like natural, like happen naturally and see that response. And it was, from what I've heard, it's all been very positive. I haven't heard anything otherwise. It's just been really interesting to watch how that happens. And now that it, like, we couldn't tour on it, that we just were like, hey, everyone's at home, so like here's something to do. Here, listen to a record.
Yeah,
I thought that was like really interesting to watch how different that was.
I'd be interested to hear what Anthony Fantano thinks of our record, even if it's a four.
But even if Anthony Fantano says that is the worst thing that he's heard, I want to
at least he's heard it, right?
He thinks.
But yeah, it can't be, like, it can't really be understated enough how much, like, work Nico has done for the promotion of this. But, like, like everybody has already said, this is, like, sort of our first big release. And it's, we were flying blind for a lot of it. And we were asking for advice from other musicians. For a lot of stuff, we'll reach out to, like, our peers and friends who maybe have already done this before, and you know, we try and figure out the best options for stuff. And it was hard. Like originally we were trying to like emailing like Epitaph and like Paranoise and stuff, and it's like, god, that would have been so sick. But like at this, it came to a point where realizing that, like, working with an independent label, like our friend Danny, who runs Knife Punch, along with Kevin, but a close friend of ours, like working with our friends and like working and talking to reviewers who's like reviews we like their writing. It was super, super cool to like have, what's the saying, like have all your hands in the pot, like, you know, like have total control of what you're releasing and making. And it was a really cool experience. It was it's a lot, and you have to have a team to do it. I wouldn't ever do this alone, but like, yeah. DIY baby.
Sure. Yeah, actually, like in college, I went to college for music industry, and you know, I had to do two internships, and the first one that I did was kind of like a self-made internship. I worked with this local band called the Foresters, who they had like sent in their album for the student-run record label that I was a part of for their consideration, and that didn't end up going through, but I really enjoyed it and, you know, believed in the band, and I wanted to help them out. So I ended up kind of doing like PR for the album, kind of independently, like teaching myself DIY. So I definitely connect with that, especially the way, like when Nika reached out to me, you know, I always enjoy a personalized pitch from a band, you know, that shows that, you know, you're thinking about yourselves and you're also thinking about who you're talking to, and, you know, just really putting that extra thought into it.
It can be scary cold emailing. Yeah. But like, you know, do a little bit of background research on who you're talking to.
Go with it. Because like, yeah, at the end of the day, you never really know like the connections you'll make from just reaching out to like anybody, no matter if you think it's like a shot in the dark. I've been like thoroughly surprised with the amount of like progress that I've anybody.
For sure.
I actually have to have a Google Calendar now to like for stuff like this. It's wild.
That's a step in the right direction.
Like, yeah, and it's awesome because, like, you know, I mean, I don't know you, but I really enjoy talking to you right now. This is fun. For sure. Otherwise, I would just be, like, trying to get everybody to play a game of Among Us or something. Like, just being bored in my room. Like, this is really cool.
For sure, yeah. And, I mean, with DIY ethics kind of being, like, such a key tenet of the band, you know, and like you said, the way you've been reaching out to people and the way you tour, the way, you know, your kind of advocacy and stuff, where does that kind of come from? And do you have any kind of, like, tips for bands who are looking to do something similar?
Well, for me, I guess I've always been drawn to, like, the punk scene. I kind of grew up just listening to a lot of punk music, and eventually I started going to a lot of DIY shows, and I always wanted to be a musician. Having like severe mental health at an early age, I never thought I was like capable of a lot of things, but amazingly enough, like being around the DIY community at an early age, support and kind of just gave me the tools and like resources to kind of do things myself and to like get out there and do things that I never thought I would be able to do. And I really think that like finding a community of who are doing the same thing as you're doing, reaching out to like activist groups that you really like what they're, you know, doing, really helps kind of helps you and helps people around you to kind of just like better yourselves and better the people around you. And for me personally, it's just been like being a part of these communities has helped me just do things that I never thought I'd be able to do. And also being in groups that have like a lot of political views, it's also helped me, you know, like understand things that I wasn't privy to beforehand. It also helped me like go to a lot of protests and do a lot of like community activism and stuff like that. And I think that's also what we try to be very vocal in our band about, because if, you know, you have a platform, no matter how big or small, it still has the ability to like change people's opinions or to educate somebody or to give somebody a different perspective. I think that's super important, especially in punk music. I've seen a lot of discourse about some people thinking that punk isn't political and that punk is just like this like genre, and punk is specifically political. It's always been political, and like politics isn't just about like voting for someone. It's about like taking care of your community. It's about like doing like outreach. It's about so many different things. And I think that the most punk thing you can do is just be like somebody that takes care of your community and takes care of the people around you. So, yeah, it's going off on a tangent, but that's it means a lot to me, just everything about all that.
Yeah, I think, like, just for me personally, at least, like, before I joined this band, I was also kind of like, how do you do anything? How do you do that? I don't know. This seems very scary, and I'm just going to cry about it. But I learned a lot being in this group, and because it's kind of having this community and being a part of this community there's a lot more than just being like, well, I'm here. It's like there are things that you should be doing and also things that could interest you that you might want to do. I didn't really go to like any DIY shows. I'm not gonna name the bands, but I was just always seeing like metalcore acts and like big venues. And because there really wasn't like a scene in Norwalk, Connecticut, which is where I was like, how do you do anything? I was in a high school band that was just like, yes, we'll play at our teen youth center and just do that for the next like 2 years. But then I joined this band and I realized like, you know, there's ways to be a part of helping out your local venues or like your local DIY spots or people who make zines and people who, you know, do merch or, you know, even just helping places that do donations and all that stuff, whether it be food or clothing. There's like a lot to get involved in, and it's all about just like what you are willing to do, I think, as well.
I think everybody summed it up the best, but like just, I guess, a broad statement on what everybody else has said, because that's it. I mean, is if you're isolated, if you're trying to do stuff alone, it's going to be really, really hard to build your ethics, right? Because the idea of ethics is, you know, how you like relate to other people and how you respond to certain situations. Well, you need other people to respond to certain situations. Communication and community, you know, they have the same prefix or whatever the fuck you want, I can't remember what it's called. The main word of it, right? The root word.
Yes.
They got the same thing going on, you know, commune or, you know, together. Like, and that's what it is. If you're going to be a part of DIY, you have to be a part of a community, a group of people. That doesn't mean that everybody on Twitter is in the same damn DIY community. That means the people that you interact with directly. And then, you know, of course, the people that you interact with online, of course, it's important to still, you know, foster like healthy relationships with those people. But like doing your part in talking with other people, being active in like what's going on around you, working with people, working together. That's like DIY ethics 101. And that's how you build ethics in my experience, working with people.
Yeah, I mean, kind of apart from that side of things, it seems like also, you know, the simple fact that you as a band are, you know, representing like marginalized groups through your music is something that, you know, people seem to really connect with. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about, you know, the role representation plays in the band and the way you present yourselves.
Well, I guess for starters, like not that there was anything necessarily wrong with this, but when I first started to go to shows, I noticed that there was a lot of cis dudes that were playing music, and there was always kind of like a weird feeling that I got with the idea of like playing with them, like doing music alongside them. Like it always seemed like they didn't want part of that. And so for a while, like, I kind of just attended shows and I thought about it a lot. I showed a lot of interest to a lot of those people, but I felt like I could never really do music alongside them. And then I remember I was like at a show and I just saw this like person, specifically they were a femme person and they were doing guitar. And I was like mind blown. Like I was so in awe of this person and I was so like excited that there was like somebody that was different, and it made me feel like, you know, I could also do something like that. And eventually that person and I became friends and they were like, hey, do you want to like start a band? And I was like, yes. And I was terrified, but like we did it, and we played music together, and every we would like get together and practice, and we wrote a couple of songs together, and we never actually ended up playing a show, but I would like to think that that gave me a lot of motivation, and it made me feel like in a small way like I was represented, and I ended up getting like that kind of feeling that I could do something like that. And I ended up being in a band and I ended up playing shows and I ended up playing shows to like a lot of people. It was something that I never thought I'd be able to do. And seeing more and more representation in communities and in bands and stuff like that is something that's so, and so awesome. And I always hope that I can be that for somebody else. And I've had multiple instances where I've had people come up to me and say, like, you playing music has given me the inspiration or motivation to like get a guitar, get a bass guitar, to like start writing my own stuff. And like, it's still thinking about that to this day is like very mind-boggling to me, because I would never like imagine myself as that person for somebody else. But it's the little things like that, they really do make a difference.
Oh, that is, yeah, like I was just thinking in my head, like just growing up and being, I had a lot of bands that I really liked, but I didn't have any bands that had people that looked like me, or just anyone that even showed that they cared. And I mean, I was younger, so I at the time I was just like, that's fine. And then I grew up and I was like, no, that was not fine.
Yeah.
I think it's important, because it really, like, I just being as like a kid going to these shows, I would feel safe sometimes. Like I would feel like people, like you were saying, like I just wasn't welcome. It just, there have been times where people have said things to me but I was at like a metalcore show, so I'm not expecting any better, I guess. It was just, I don't know, it's just I think it's just, it's deathly important. A lot of people, I think, like to gloss over representation and they don't think it's necessary or that it's vital, but it is, because it makes people, you know, it makes them go back and they go, okay, yeah, like this is, I can put my foot in this as well. Like I can also do this too. And, you know, one of the hurdles I had was also trying to not be put in the box of like, oh my God, you're like a black femme drummer. And I'm like, the thing, like it's a double-edged sword almost, because it's like, don't tokenize that, and don't like people will be kind of silly and forget to like just be normal and decent when you're regarding someone in that sense. So I think like being able to be myself and just do that, I think, is the best thing, I think, for myself and just for anyone else, instead of trying to pretend like I'm not, if that makes sense.
For sure.
To people that don't know us or follow us on our personal sort of social medias, you know, to someone who wouldn't know my pronouns, I pass as, you know, a cis white male, right? And I am super, super aware of that. And because of, you know, in doing so, like, I feel my place in this band is I'm like beyond proud to like amplify, you know, the voices of like the rest of my bandmates who are a part of like marginalized communities and just kind of like learn from that. Like, I've learned a lot of stuff about like Latin sort of culture from Nico, and also like I've been more aware, especially more so this year than like any other year, just because of a lot of, I'm getting much more into politics. This is the first year I've ever been able to like vote in like a federal election and like all that stuff. And, you know, just given the events of the year, it's been a lot. So there's been a lot of a fuck ton of learning that I and hopefully a lot of like other white people do, and people who are non-political who are like starting to like, you know, sort of get into it. There's that's where I sort of feel comfortable, is like serving as just an amplifier to other people's voices. Then in terms of like the non-binary thing, I learned a lot, and I think we all have, about like about who we are as people from touring and from being in this band. A lot of my identity I've found off of conversations of other people and just learning like how to socially interact with people. I wasn't super social before doing DIY stuff. So yeah, the non-binary, like my identity is like a more personal thing to me, but like in ethics as a whole and like representation of and how we show that in our band, I'm super comfortable with being a learning and supporting and doing what I can to like make sure that you know, people's voices are heard. And also, I guess it's important to talk about the representation of mental health. Nico does a really cool thing when we were at shows where they made zines called Sometimes I Get Nervous on Airplanes. That was like helpful tips for people. And I remember that like people fucking love those. We got, I'm pretty sure Nico has gotten like emails about it and stuff. And then also, this is like a throwback and not necessarily a marginalized community by any means, but I used to make a vegan cookbook and sell it on tour for vegan people. But that's neither here nor there. That's not really about representation like that much. But yeah.
True. I definitely connect with what you're saying about kind of like just expanding kind of, you know, your circle and, you know, being a voice to amplify. Like, that's been something that I've tried to do with this podcast in the little over a year that I've been doing it. Like, diversity has always been a priority for me, like from when I was first writing out notes about what I wanted the show to be. Like, that was one of the priorities. And I joke that, you know, if I could, I would edit myself out of the podcast and just have it be, you know, let the people who I'm talking to, let their voices shine. So I definitely connect with that.
Real quick, there's an important thing that that just came to mind, a quote. I can't remember the exact quote, but the gist of it is it's from a local drag artist here in Jacksonville, Florida. Her name is BB Deluxe, and she's absolutely fantastic. She's a sort of a figurehead in sort of the LGBT community in Jax. But anyway, it's about there's a difference between like tolerance and inclusion. We're not trying to tolerate people of different, you know, types, whatever that may be. It's inclusion. It's everybody doing shit together. Yeah. And I that's just an important point to bring up. I don't know. Like, I doubt that you have any like 40-year-old Republican dads listening, but like, maybe you do, but there's a difference between
my dad
tolerance
might be
and inclusion. Hell yeah. That's sick. That's a good, it's good to have family as like a support sometimes. we get harsh critiques from family members on our music.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And I also, like, kind of jumping off that, I kind of wanted to talk about the idea of, you know, using art and music to kind of address concepts and get messages across that aren't really quite as easily, you know, represented with spoken or written word alone. You know, kind of like the added emotion based on like the tone and the sound. Could you talk a little bit about that and how that, you know, comes into play with the band?
Oh, that's going to be a little bit of a difficult one for me because Tyler is actually the one that writes most of the music, like in terms of the structure and the lyrics. But as far as I know, a lot of our subject material is about kind of a lot of things, really. And there's never really a song that's just about one thing. It kind of also goes into different things. And I think that's the cool thing about art in general, and then writing that type of way, is that I've had so many people come up to me while we were touring and stuff and get such different things from like songs that they heard, that like just thinking about it, like thinking about my person on a certain song, I wouldn't have gotten from that. And a lot of our subject matter has to do with religion. A lot of it has to do with interpersonal relationships. Death is a big theme, and in different ways, kind of like losing a person in literal ways or figuratively, and kind of just like the feelings that go with that. And then we also have songs that we have a song that we play a lot that's specifically about censorship in the like female body and how it's unfair, you know, the way that people are perceived, not wanting to be perceived a certain way, and it just so happens. And also LGBT topics, we talk a lot about that, as well as like body and gender dysphoria, and it's really like a big spectrum of things. But I think with all that being said, it's kind of cool to know that everything kind of can branch out into different things for the listener.
I also agree with that like the songs kind of cover a wide variety of topics. As the drummer, I you know, usually I like don't hear what's going on until when we were recording, and I was like, oh, that's what we're saying, okay. I really like a lot of the things, like, now, you know, I know what we're talking about and the lyrics and all that stuff. I like a lot of the lyrics in Guilt. I think they are, I always have a really weird relationship with bands whenever their songs are like way too on the nose, or it's like, I like really vague, and I like, you could put it to any situation, really. And I think with this record especially, these songs almost kind of feel like it just sums up the band's message as a whole. It kind of covers every topic we kind of really wanted to talk about, or even songs that we put out before and after this LP release also covered other topics as well. I think it's just really cool to kind of feel like the band has a almost like a sentient voice. It does. That was a wow. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like it's this sentient being that is like, yes, this is what I have to say. So, yeah.
I think, well, like Nico said, Tyler sort of brings like the skeleton of the songs to us. And for when it comes to the, and they're the main sort of songwriter, without a doubt. And like, but during the writing of this LP, a lot of it we tracked while on the road. Not the actual recording, but like the demos into Tyler's laptop on GarageBand. I mean, we really sat and thought hard, like in like Starbucks's and libraries and wherever else you can be for free and not get pestered, across the country, listening to bands trying to figure out things that we want. And how to like merge each other's sort of like musical tastes into, you know, what we want this like end product of this, our first LP to be. But you could say like figuratively, a lot of the sound, not so much lyrically, but a lot of the sound was sort of built off of like in like tones and moods, was built off of the experiences that we had on the road. Just a lot of stuff happened. I wouldn't even say like that. It was just so much, overwhelming is a word for it. But one thing that I really, really like about Guilt and that I find is interesting in the music is a lot of people have called it like genre bending, but we don't like, it's more likely that we won't stick to one genre within a song, and the song structures are wacky. Like there's so many, like the end of Children of Animals just goes into like this like crazy ass like hardcore and blast beat thing. It's fun. It's really, really fun. And I think that lends to like the catharsis, but or like that cathartic feeling that people mention. But like the LP writing was done over the course of months of touring, and also when Tyler originally brought it to us. But like the song structures and sort of the way it's performed is like what I feel like makes a significant like portion of why we're like kind of unique genre wise. It's because there's a lot of different sounds and we're pulling from a lot of influences too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely something that like I connect with. Like I love that the last, you know, few years genre really is breaking down even more so, and like finally, it's just becoming like a free for all and people can do whatever they want and it'll find an audience, which I really love. And I was listening to Just an Insight podcast and you mentioned how kind of like all the songs on the album had kind of like roughly the same number of streams, which, you know, kind of points to the fact that people are taking Ignore What's Missing and as like a complete piece of art. And I was curious if that's something that you kind of like hoped for and, you know, how you've kind of seen people connect with it so far.
So I think we definitely, I mean, personally, not having a lot of experience with creating music, let alone like a record, we definitely wanted to make it like a journey where it kind of has these set moods specifically to kind of take you through this like path of, in my understanding of like, I guess, loss, like the different emotions of going through that, like acceptance, grief, anger, and then it also kind of sparks from different things like politics and relationships and loved ones passing and stuff like that. And I think we tried very hard to make it an experience for the listener. And as somebody that is, unfortunately, do not sit through an entire album and just like pick apart my favorite song from an album and put it on my, it was very difficult to kind of get into that headspace. But I think just like anything, something that you have to spend a lot of time curating, and it was really cool. And we're actually working on another LP and we are trying to do that as well. We're trying to create songs with an idea of flowing into the other one to kind of give it like this seamless transition that is an idea rather than just like 12 songs put together.
I would say I'm on the other end where I like whole album front to back, like album order is so important to me. I like when I listen to the Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, I could not imagine that album being played in, I couldn't imagine them putting those songs in any other order than the final order. And I think it's really cool that the album is being like taken in as a whole album. Because I feel like it's almost like stepping into a different world for a few seconds and then like stepping out, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it feels really cool that it's a shared experience for a lot of other people, that it's not just like, oh yeah, I know Flowers, but like there's like a few other songs on there. I don't know. I like looking at bands as their albums, because I also really like albums that tell stories or albums that have like a one giant theme that's going on the entire time and it's connected between each song. I really enjoy that. It's almost like a storybook of sorts.
For me, when I like sort of started in music and like listening to bands and like really developing an interest in it past just playing like Guitar Hero when I was 12, is like I started listening to like DIY bands. And the difference between, or at least what I thought, the difference between a DIY band and a band who really made it is that DIY bands put out EPs and bands that actually make it put out an LP. So I thought of like full albums as like this like huge milestone of like, oh shit, that band's made it. And bands that put out EPs, that's what I was listening to. I wasn't really listening to many singles, but like listening to like a 4 or 5 song collection felt like just like the perfect amount of songs versus like one of the few CDs I had was like Nickelback's This Is How You Remind Me or whatever the name of that album is, and along with like a Black Eyed Peas CD or whatever. I had awful taste. That's subjective, but anyway, like really the first band that I listened to that was like DIY band, or at least I would consider that was like a full album, was like Die on Mars from Callous Cowboys. Once I heard that, I was like, oh shit. Cause we know them, we're like friends with them. And I was like, that means that we can make this. And then we did, and it feels really cool. But since listening to like the Callous Cowboys release that LP is when I've actually started listening to like full LPs from like bands within our realm. We're not a mathcore band like them, but like that sort of like, you know, seeing my friends make that made it feel possible. Listening to a full album, I think, is like it's like a sacred thing that you do with a band you love, I think, or like a cult band. But like,
true.
It's really cool that people are, I didn't really know that. That's really cool that people are listening like sort of like consistently through it. That makes the art feel super appreciated. That's cool.
Yeah, it definitely warms my heart. I'm very much an album person. So I love when I see, you know, full albums connecting with a band or connecting with fans, I mean.
Hell yeah, yeah. Neat.
I'm definitely the odd one out in this band when it comes to that.
Yeah, and I mean, Tristan mentioned before how, you know, Guild's music doesn't necessarily kind of like fit the conventional like verse, chorus, verse, song structure, and yes. Kind of like play around with different forms of repetition and, you know, obviously different genres and everything. I'm curious how that kind of like plays into, I know you mentioned that Tyler's like the main songwriter, but how does that kind of like play into the writing process and the song formation?
Tyler finds a funny synth on GarageBand.
Tyler is one of people that can just create something in thin air. Like Tyler will hear like a note and it will like inspire them to create an entire song in like an hour. It's a skill that I cannot even comprehend, but because of that, Tyler writes a lot of music that kind of switches up a lot. And I would say, like, if you're trying to follow the formula for like specific genres, I would say that we definitely stray away from that. And that is one of the hardest things, I think, if you're somebody that just like started listening to us, or especially in a live situation, because like I've quite literally seen people like start to get into our music and then all of a sudden we change into something really slow and sad and like very like low key, and then I see the confusion in their eyes when they're like, okay, now I'm just like slowly bobbing my head. And I think it's cool like when you see somebody that like kind of knows how the song is and they kind of go along with that, but I can definitely understand it being confusing. And I think a lot of the times we do that because I guess the music for us is more about like art instead of like following a formula. And I definitely think that that could be like seen as something that doesn't necessarily make our music palatable for everybody. And I think, you know, some people recognize that and some people make very like formulaic songs and, you know, just want to make art that quite literally could be very difficult for most people to listen to, but like it makes them happy. So I think it's either like a good middle ground of finding a balance between the two, or just like saying fuck it and just doing what you want to do. Like if you just want to make money, like make formulaic songs. If you just want to make like art that you feel good about, like do whatever you want to do, you know? And none of them are like interchangeable either or, and be successful. Like we've seen that a lot in different bands, but I guess that's where we come from at this point.
Yeah, I was also just going to say that like almost every day in our group chat, Tyler's like, I have a new song I made.
Yeah.
It's like, how? Like, I don't, I look at music and like music, I took music theory in my senior year of high school. And not only do I not remember any of that, but also was it so complicated? It was so complicated. I could not grasp a handle on like, you know, like how to end a melody line or something. It was just a lot. And so when it comes to like creating a song, like I just play the drums and I try to take it from there of like, I am given like, here's like a drum beat for this song. And then I'm like, okay, I'll play it. And I think that's just like the furthest extent to my knowledge of like writing music goes. I'm still kind of like new to it in a sense of like trying to figure out, like I'm just like watching the process of how these guilt songs are formed. Like Tristan said earlier, like how Tyler kind of brings like the backbones of the song to the group. And seeing like the different genres that are at play is also really interesting, but it's a whole other world because I'm also just, I guess I don't know music genres. The only one I can really tell is metalcore. That's about it.
I think it's interesting how I work as a music teacher. It's what I do, and I love theory so much and figuring it out, but the thing that I give kudos to Tyler for is like in the production of like these songs is they're not thinking about theory. Like whenever we're like in the, let's say we're trying to like figure out an old song we haven't played for a while and we're trying to like figure out the rhythm guitar part or the bass line or whatever. It's not, oh, this is out of key, or oh, this, you know, this let's try this minor or whatever, this major or whatever. It's good note or bad note. Is this good note or is this bad note? And I think, and that's awesome. I think that simplicity of good, bad allows for like to be like really, really creative. And sometimes it ends up in a really cool demo, and sometimes it ends up in something really weird that maybe has potential or maybe doesn't, but it's way sick than following like a verse chorus pop punk song. Like in my opinion, it's so cool to be a part of the creative team for that. Maybe not as a listener, like Nico said, it can be some I would say some of our songs can be kind of like not easily followable, and that's totally fair. But like that's sort of like a give and take. Like, who are you writing for? Like, some of these songs we pull from like Me Without You a lot, and Me Without You is fucking weird. And we're happy to embrace that.
I think that's really cool the way you kind of said that. Like, theory is definitely something that goes way over my head. So it's nice to know that that's not necessarily like the end all be all in the writing process.
No, you really just need to know what you like. You need to know if it's good or if it's bad, and then boom, that's it.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I always kind of like to wrap up the same way, which is by, you know, asking for either a piece of advice that you have, or, you know, something you've been thinking about, something that you've been kind of connecting with lately, whatever it kind of is that's been on your mind that you would like to share.
I'm just going to say my first piece of advice is stop looking back at pictures of you from like 5 to 10 years ago. It's just stop. Just don't do it. It's not going to help you. Just ignore that it ever happened. And also just, you know, if you like music and you hear a band and you want to do that, you quite literally just can. No one can stop you from just being like, I can also create this music. So yeah, that's my piece of advice.
I've got three general pieces of advice. One, buy a new pair of shoes. It'll feel great. Two, deactivate your Twitter. Just do it. You'll feel so free. And then temporarily, you don't have to do it forever. And then three, you can join a Discord chat.
Oh, true.
Yeah, they're fun.
Okay.
But like what I mean is like you hang out with friends, like talk to your friends. Yeah, sorry.
My piece of advice is do shit. Just even if you're scared, just do it. Like there's something very freeing about doing something and messing up, but then knowing, you know, that you did it. And even if you suck at it, like, think about how it makes you feel. Like, if it makes you feel great, do it again. And even if you mess up again, like, keep doing it. And if it makes you feel bad, now you know that about yourself. And you don't have to do it again. So.
It's true.
That's my advice.
That's the best advice, I think.
Thank you. Thank you. I panicked while thinking about it.
Just do shit.
That's definitely something, like, I try to be the kind of person who it's like, you know, if I want to have someone on the podcast or, you know, whatever else in my life that I'm like, you know, putting myself out there for, like reaching out to someone, you know, I try to be like, have the mindset, like the worst thing that can happen is they'll ignore you or they'll say no. And even if that happens, it's not the end of the world. And what do you know? They might say yes.
Definitely. It's good. Good.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Is there anything else that you've kind of been itching to get out about the album or the band that we haven't hit on?
We're writing?
We are writing on the 27th of November.
Yep.
We are playing the second half of our album on Knife Punch Records Twitch channel. And if whomever is listening and wants to tune in to us singing some sad songs, even sadder than the first half, can just go to our Instagram, GuiltFL, and we'll have all.
Yes, that's definitely the gut-wrenching half, especially, you know, the last song on the album is one of the ones that goes the hardest for me.
Yeah, everything's sad, and then at the end, there's just a knife.
I cried to Mirror for the first time, like, a few weeks ago after it was released, and I was like, oh, shit, this is kind of sad.
And that was my conversation with Gil. I was honestly not aware of the band before the release of Ignore What's Missing, but it's been so cool to watch people connect with this record. They're certainly on the list of must-see bands once shows are allowed to happen again, and I know that will be a cathartic experience for everyone involved. The band is really something special, so please check them out. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. DIY. You can do this too. Fly on the call.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.